All right, everyone, welcome back to Fundamentally Sound Podcast with a little crossover edition with my guy Rob Doster over at NBC Sports. Rob, what's going on, man?
Reeves, what's going on, man? I'm glad that we could finally do this.
Yeah, man. It's going a little bit better for you than Fantasy League, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I can't believe that I agreed to actually do this after you didn't invite me to.
Like the day after, too.
So people that don't know, Reeves runs the Fundamentally Sound podcast, and which you should go into Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and anywhere that you get podcasts for free. Go subscribe to that. Rate it, review it, give it 5 stars. Then do the same thing for me.
Yeah,
rate College Basketball Talk. Rate it, review it, give it 5 stars. Do all that good stuff. But so he's doing a fantasy league for his podcast, and I didn't get an invite, which is just I can't believe it. And so I called him out for not inviting me into the fantasy league. And like literally an hour later, he's like, "Hey, you want to come on my podcast?" And I was like, "Well, yeah."
You went LeBron. You subtweeted me.
Yeah, I did subtweet you. I'm gonna subtweet you all season. Every single time that I see one of those tweets, man, I'm hurt. I'm devastated.
I'll tell you what. You can be in the next one. We're gonna have different contests all throughout the year. I'll make sure.
I don't want to be in the pity fantasy league. I don't want that. I'm good right here. I'm gonna start my own fantasy league. That's what I'm gonna do.
I think you should start it probably out in China because that's where you might be able to find a couple players.
Yeah. So you want to start on that? Should we dive in?
I think we have to. I mean, I was listening to you, your last pod with Norlander, and you guys both said it, and me and you were just talking about it off air about how just, like, sick you are, like, the repeat of, like, just talking about this black cloud over, like, the FBI investigation, suspensions all kind of been handed down over the last, what, 4 days or so? And now you have this on what – today was a weird day in the game.
Oh, man, it was such a weird day. And I thought we were finally getting to a point where this was going to kind of slow down a little bit, right? And then the Colin Sexton thing happens, and then this happens, and then everything with Georgia Tech. Like, it's just – I'll tell you what, that trip to Shanghai – or no, to Huangzhou, I think that's how you say it. That trip to China, that game, it's just been such a – such a mess, man. Like, Georgia Tech is over there, and they have stories coming out about, like, fake boosters helping, like, paying for flights, and then LiAngelo Ball gets arrested. So where are we going to start, man? We got a lot to dive into on this.
I think we should – let's start with Georgia Tech, because this has kind of been ongoing for a couple days now, because the first is – the suspension for Okogie and Jackson came out, what, yesterday, right? That news broke Monday, or did that break earlier in the – or late last week?
I think it was like last Thursday or something where it just kind of came out that they were being held out of competition because they had to get their eligibility recertified. So when you self-report something to the NCAA, like this is kind of how the process works. When you self-report something to the NCAA, they make you ineligible and then you have to like reinstate your eligibility. And that's kind of what the Georgia Tech was in the process of doing. And they're probably going to end up having to suspend Josh Okogie and Tajik Jackson for, I mean, I would guess it was maybe 2 games. I think combined it was, what, $1,300?
Yeah, like they went on an expensive date, essentially.
Yeah, so just for context, John Wall's freshman year, he got suspended for, what was it, an exhibition and one game for $880 in impermissible benefits, and these guys combined got $1,300.
Right, so it's... it's going to be, what, 10% of the season, which ends up being 3 games. But it's – like, I did not think the Georgia Tech story would get overlooked today. But what broke this morning when Parrish sent out the tweet, went to the article about Ron Bell, and essentially it all started over a soured relationship between Ron Bell, who is this – what you just described, what, just like a fake booster is kind of the only way to describe him?
All right, so the story, like, it's just such a weird story. So when Pastner was an assistant at Arizona, he made friends with this guy who happened to be the nephew of a big-time AAU coach in New York.
I thought it started even back when he was a player.
Whenever it was, it was at some point when he was in at Tucson. Whatever it was, when Pastner was in Arizona. It kind of came up that this guy, Ron Bell, who is the nephew of a big-time AAU coach, and a guy that had, like, Meta World Peace and Kenny Anderson and a lot of these, like, some of these famous New York players from the late 90s. So it would make sense that, you know, an assistant coach would kind of befriend this guy. And I think the connection they both made was they were both Jewish and So they got to know each other and they kind of became friendly. And this guy, Ron Bell, has like kind of been through it a little bit. Like, I guess he was addicted to painkillers or addicted to prescription medication. And then he ended up getting in some kind of trouble. I'm not exactly clear on what it was,
but it was like 3 years.
Yeah. But so he got in some kind of trouble and then he ended up committing a parole violation and he got sent to jail for 4 years, gets out. I think he struggled through, like he beat cancer. And like, he's really been through, like he's had a tough go of it. And through it all, like him and Pastner have kind of become pretty close. And
the quote was that Pastner saved his life. Like, that was a quote from him.
Yeah, and I think Pastner was like called him his brother on like on the record, and just so they're like actually close. But what I guess at Georgia Tech, what's kind of happened is, I guess Bell is he's claiming that Pastner gave money to him to get to the players. Like, it's just such a
It was all small amounts, like $200-$300 at a time. Yeah,
and it was never anything all that big. And then I guess they had some kind of falling out, right? Like, well, let's rewind a little bit. At one point, so I guess he developed a relationship with some of the guys on the team, with Josh Okogie and Dadrick Jackson. I guess those two are roommates. And Ron Bell got to know Okogie, and then he got to know Jackson through Okogie. This is coming from Gary Parrish at CBS Sports is the guy that kind of broke this whole story. When Pastner was at Memphis, Parrish lives in Memphis. He's the Memphis radio host. Used to be a beat writer for the Memphis Commercial Appeal. He's been covering that team for probably 2 decades now. And he got to know Pastner really, really well through that. And so he had a prior relationship with Ron Bell. So Ron Bell...
he went to him. He went to the source.
He went to Parrish to kind of give his side of the story. Yeah. And I guess at some point, I missed over something. So Bell flew Josh Okogie and Tadrick Jackson out to Tucson to stay at his house, right? Like, which is kind of weird. Like, what are you doing flying two college kids out to your house across the country? Like, he gave Parrish pictures of them like swimming in the pool. That's kind of weird, right?
It's incredibly weird. Like, I want to know, like, how did that come about? Because even as a college kid, you're like, I mean, I get it. You're like, hey, it's a free trip to the Phoenix area, Tucson area, and what looked like a pretty dope house, nice pool setup. But, like, why would you still go there?
Yeah, and why would you want to, like, invite those kids out there?
What's the connection there? Like you mentioned, like, why are you sitting there? Because he's an older guy. I mean, he's in his, what, 40s, 50s? And it's like, why are you inviting them out to the house? Why, if there's these impermissible benefits, why not just give them money or set up some other connection?
Yeah, and so he's been giving them, like, I guess he ordered them shoes and ordered them clothes and ordered them shirts and just giving them stuff, you know, like stuff that college kids.
$80 of Knicks apparel, which is $80 too much.
Yeah, so what did he get, like a knockoff Kristaps Porzingis jersey probably?
right, like a long, he got like a hoodie.
Yeah, look, if you're going to get a jersey, you might as well get Kristaps, but I don't know. The whole thing there is kind of weird, right? But then I guess what happened was that Ron and Josh had a falling out over something. Someone told me it was over like some kind of t-shirt promotion they had going on, and I guess like Pastner took the other guy's side, and that pissed off Ron Bell. And then like Pastner didn't call him for his birthday or something like that, and that was like a sign of disrespect.
That's the funniest thing in the world. Like, I mean, we're both guys that's the same age. When's the last time you just picked up the phone and called a guy for their birthday?
No, you don't. Like, right. maybe I'll send a text. Like, right. If I happen to, like, notice it on Facebook or
right.
something.
A text, and if I see you, I'll buy you a beer.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. But I don't – you know how often it is I actually, like, pick up the phone to call my friends?
0 times. Like, there better be a reason why. Like, my phone conversations are with my family, and then there better be a reason why I'm on the phone with a friend or something like that.
No, you know what it is? If I'm not FaceTiming you because I know that my son wants to see you, then I'm texting you.
Right.
Beyond that, like, I have a 2-year-old. The grandparents want to FaceTime him. Even then, like, if we're not FaceTiming my kid, like, I don't need to call my mom. She listens to this podcast too, and she knows it. She stopped trying to call me. She sends me texts.
I'm in a family. Yeah, I'm in a family group text. Like, I talk to my family every day. It's just all via text message.
Yeah, we do the same thing. We have one So on my mom's side of the family, there's a lot of us. There's like maybe like I think 35 or something, and like a bunch of first cousins and everything, and we're all on like a WhatsApp chat. That's how we communicate. Like we talk about rules of card games that we play and like just random nonsense like that. But I don't talk to them on the phone. Like just text, send me a message.
Imagine being mad that a friend didn't call you for their birthday or for your birthday.
I how about this? I deliberately leave like my birthday off of all social media accounts because I don't want that attention. I don't want you to call me for my birthday. Like I don't want the text. I don't want you to make a big deal out of it. Like whatever.
Right. Like if I get it, great. I'll respond. Thank you.
And here's the best part. My birthday every year is at the Final Four. Just where my birthday falls. It's always going to be within that week when I'm at the Final Four. Right, nobody ever knows.
That's ideal for you.
Yeah, I don't want that kind of attention, man. Getting old too. It's like I can only pretend to be 25 for so long.
Right, right. Like I have no more my next significant birthday is in a decade. Like
yeah.
I'll have a phone call then, I'm sure. But until then, it's like.
And so how do we get on this topic?
Because
Ron Bell.
That's one of the starting points to the jumping off points to this thing.
Yeah, so Ron Bell got mad and he decided that he was going to snitch, and I guess he told Pastner, let him know that like this, he was mad about him and threatened him, and then reached out to Parrish and Norland. I don't know if you listened to their podcast on Tuesday, but they kind of went behind the scenes a little bit on the story. And like Gary's known about this for I guess weeks.
Right.
I mean, he has a relationship with Ron. Well, maybe relationship is too strong, but he knows Ron knew that that's who he could go to if he wanted to make this public. And he went to Gary and he made it public at the end of the day. And I guess, did we miss anything in that whole story? It was kind of convoluted and we got a little bit off of tangents, but we covered everything, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think so. I think it's just, I think it's just a weird situation because now it's what else. It's becoming like a word versus word, like a battle of words.
Yeah, so that's the thing that gets me, right? Like, this is – am I allowed to curse on these podcasts? I can curse, right?
Yeah, you can curse.
Like, this is some real ho shit that Ron Bell is pulling. Like, it's petty, I guess, is probably the –
I was going to say, it's not even petty because, like, petty stuff is funny to me, like the petty wars that go on in the NBA. This is just bullshit. Like, you're not hurting Pastner here. Like, you're hurting these kids, which I don't think is what he realizes.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think that Ron realizes he doesn't actually have any proof. Like, he acknowledges that in the story to GP.
Yeah.
But there's, like, Pastner's not going to get hit for this. For one, like, there's Pastner. So I had this conversation with a guy who, let's just say he's someone that's dealt with Pastner and other coaches before of Pastner's level and Pastner's ilk. And basically the way that he phrased it was like, Josh is one of the smartest people in coaching when it comes to stuff like this. Like he's not going to give you anything that will ever leave a trail back to him. Everything, if they're going to have a conversation about this, it will either be in person or on the phone. He has this kind of reputation for responding to every email he gets, every text he gets. Like if you're just a random fan, and you get his email address, and you send him an email, and you say, like, hey, coach, I had a problem with the way that you did this substitution in this game or whatever, he'll respond to that email. Like, that's his reputation.
But yeah, he responded to – was it a Syracuse fan last year that called to – left him a voicemail about how they thought it was rude that people were chanting airball at a player?
Yeah, like, that's what he does. Like, he responds to everybody. And – there is nothing in any of his email accounts. The Memphis Commercial Appeal actually did a big story on this. Like they FOIA'd all of his emails a couple of years ago, and there was nothing in there that they could find. Like there was even, I guess there was some like interesting stuff, and they were really thorough. And I think they went through like 8 years worth of every email that he sent, which, you know, just sounds like the worst experience.
Oh, yeah, no, thank you.
But he didn't commit any violations. Like, he's too smart for it. He's never going to be the guy that sends you that text message that says, hey, listen, I need you to give these guys the $500 that I sent you in that envelope last week.
Right, right.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was saying that, and that's where I think this is going to end up being a short-lived, quote, controversy or scandal because they're like you mentioned, and like you mentioned in Parrish's story, there's no proof. Like, Bell has a quote to Parrish that says, no, Josh is too smart to send anything, to pull a dumb move like sending a text message.
Yeah, so there's nothing in this in this entire situation that can tie Pastner to it beyond Ron Bell's word and the word of his, I guess, his girlfriend, who was discussed in the story. And so the only thing that's really going to come from this is, so here's what my prediction is, and tell me if you think this makes sense. I think that Okogie and Jackson are going to get like 2-3 games, something like that, some kind of nondescript suspension that maybe, you know, costs them a game in non-conference play against a team that, like they'll lose to UCLA because they don't have those two guys or whatever, right? It's not going to be anything big, anything season-changing. They didn't get enough money for that. I think that what's going to happen with Georgia Tech is that they'll get dinged, maybe like a couple of recruiting days. They'll lose an official visit. Maybe they get like put on probation or something. But nothing that happened there. Like the dollar amounts we're talking about are just so insignificant that it's just not anything that the NCAA is really going to care all that much about. You know, it's not Pastner's not getting $20,000 to funnel kids to a certain financial advisor. Like it's not on that level of you know, monetary value. I mean, it's a pair of shoes, like 4 shirts, a flight, and a meal. So it's really, we're talking about like tops, like maybe $2,000 worth of stuff when you consider like they let he the Ron Bell let the kid stay at his house, and you know, they paid for the cars and everything. But so the only people that are going to get hurt by this really are the kids who get suspended, and it's not even going to be anything big for them. So like Ron Bell had this idea in his head where he was going to bring everything down, and that's just not even close to what's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree completely with you that it's going to be a 3 to 5 game suspension tops, and then you know a dock of an official visit, DACA, you know, some sort of I don't even think they'll go on probation, but some sort of another dock besides like the official visit, like they'll just be something else small like that no one really notices. They're not going to lose scholarships. They're not going to lose, you know, there's not going to be ineligible players. It's not going to be vacated wins or anything like that. I think it's just more of a weird story than it is a big story.
Yeah, it's really weird. And Ron Bell thinks, I think he thinks it's going to be bigger than whatever it is. But the thing that really gets me with all of that is his whole thing was like, I want to help these kids. I'm going to befriend these kids. And I guess whatever falling out he had with Pastner, like I'm gonna punish him. I'm gonna get back at him, and it's just that's not what's gonna happen. So I don't know what would possess an individual to make that decision where he thinks he's gonna take down a program. I guess I don't know. Just everything about it just kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, and, I mean, I could understand if you had like serious allegations too against Pastner or against Georgia Tech, but when you're talking a couple grand spread out across a couple players. It's nothing like that. People hate to hear it, but that's guess what? Every somewhat decent player in America is probably getting something close to that.
Yeah. And can we make something real clear? Like I believe what Ron Bell is saying is true. So this kind of got twisted on Twitter a little bit. And when I was tweeting about it this morning, and people didn't really understand that when I say that there's no proof that can tie Josh Pastner to this, I'm not saying that I think that Josh Pastner is clear. I'm not saying that I don't think he had any involvement in this. I'm not saying I don't think he knew about it. I think he did. I believe everything that Ron Bell is saying here. But my point is that the NCAA is not going to get any information from this that is actually actionable beyond what they have been given by Georgia Tech themselves.
Yeah, and that's the big thing here. It's not – and that's just what bothers me, like you mentioned. It's just – Ron Bell is just, I mean, to put it blunt, he's just a piece of shit. Like, that's the only way to kind of look at him. I feel bad saying that for everything that he's gone through in his personal life, but this move's a piece of shit move.
Yeah, like, maybe there's a reason that, like, you've kind of had a rough life if these are the decisions that you kind of make. Like, if you're going to burn a bridge like that, like, he didn't just burn a bridge. You know, he sent a rocket into it, man.
Yeah, I mean, and to go public like that too, that's the annoying thing. It's like, again, you're just hurting the kids, and me and you are in the same boat in terms of like, this isn't a huge deal in the grand scheme of things. It's not hurting the game. It's not hurting college basketball for a player like Josh Okogie to receive a couple grand in shoes and a trip or something like that.
So let me ask you one more thing before we move on here.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know Reed Forgrave of CBS Sports had a tweet today
yeah,
that kind of got like got twisted, and, you know, it was kind of the wrong timing for him to say this, but the sentiment made sense. And kind of what he was saying is that with all the money floating around college basketball and college athletics, the more that we see these kids kind of get these, like, punished for getting $100 here or $100 there, or getting a meal or getting a free pair of shoes, they wouldn't get these. This wouldn't be a punishment. This wouldn't be a big deal if amateurism didn't exist. Like, I don't think anybody in their right mind will tell you that kids on a basketball team getting a meal paid for by somebody around the program is all that big of a deal, right? Like, it's when I was in college, like, we got, like, our, like, parents would take us out to dinner, right? Like, this is kind of, it's not really all that different, I guess. But the point kind of made sense to me in that the reason that these kids are taking the things that they are given and they are offered is because they don't really have access to anything else. And you, if you opened it up and gave them access to that kind of stuff where they didn't, if they wanted to take a trip in May and go somewhere warm and go somewhere nice and go somewhere with a pool, they wouldn't have to accept a free flight from some guy around the program. They'd be able to pay for it themselves. And instead of going to, like, someone's backyard in Tucson, maybe they're going to, like, Cabo for 4 days.
They get to go to a late spring break.
Yeah, exactly. Like four of them together go get an Airbnb.
Right, right.
Like Boca Raton or something.
Yeah, like, I saw Reed's tweet, and I understood where he's coming from, and I agreed with half of it. I thought it was kind of two thoughts into one that didn't really mesh well together, obviously, along with the timing, because he was talking about the UCLA stuff, too. That's completely separate, but the Georgia Tech stuff makes sense to me, and that's a good point, or a good good example of what you're talking about in terms of, hey, this is where, give the kids a little something, let them, you know, the example I always use is, I know at Kentucky, whenever you graduate, like this past year, like Hawkins and Willis, they do a statewide book signing tour, or autograph signing tour, like bookstores and whatnot throughout the state, make like $25,000. Let them do that in, like, you know, May of their sophomore year, and then they can use that money on whatever they want.
Yeah, and it would, like, so obviously the market is there for, right? Like,
right.
People are willing to spend this money on it, even when they're just college athletes. So it's frustrating, but we don't need to dive into this NBA, NCAA. Like, we talk about this all the time. So I guess, should we talk about what's going on with UCLA now? Because this is wild, man.
I just want LeVar to go like Liam Neeson. Like, I need Taken 4 starring LeVar Ball. Like, this right, so, bailing so, out him.
So if somehow, like, you have no idea what we're talking about, it was LiAngelo Ball, Cody Riley, and Jalen Hill, three players on this UCLA team who are actually in – do you know – is it Quanzhou? Am I saying that right?
I think so.
Let's just go with China. Let's just say China. Yeah. So they're in China – to play against Georgia Tech in this, like, Pac-12 promotional tour that they have. You know, I think what was it, Washington and Texas played 2 years ago. Last year it was Stanford and Harvard. They played in China.
Yep.
So they're trying to build the brand of the Pac-12 in China because, you know, there are, what, like 100 million NBA fans in that country. Yep. And so the Pac-12 is like, well, hey, look, they love basketball there. We might as well try to tap into that market. Makes sense. Good business sense. It's a good business move. Until you send a team over there and the players from the team in your conference that you send get caught trying to shoplift from Louis Vuitton. LiAngelo Ball, Jalen Hill, and Cody Riley are currently, as we're recording this, sitting in a Chinese jail cell, I guess. And, like, they could – so Dan Wetzel today from Yahoo Sports talked to some experts in the Chinese legal system. And, like, I don't mean to laugh. They might be spending 3 to 10 years in a Chinese prison.
That's insane. That's absolutely insane. Like, I forget who had – was it Goodman that had the original – or the original piece about the cops coming into the hotel where both Georgia Tech and UCLA were staying at and, like, held in, like, an investigation in that hotel where the players couldn't talk to coaches? Like, these are still 18-year-old kids. Do you know how scared out of your mind they would have to be?
Yeah, and – I want to know what happened there where they sat both teams. Like, were the teams hanging out, or was it just like you don't expect to see non-Chinese people in the town that they were in?
Yeah, I think it's.
And they were like, oh, these tall African American kids walked in, like, so obviously it's got to be the kids from UCLA or Georgia Tech. So that's
yeah,
who they
that
talked to.
or
That's probably what it was.
that or I wouldn't be surprised if, I mean, kids are dumb. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody had on like a UCLA or Georgia Tech, since it's UCLA. I wouldn't be surprised if someone had on a UCLA like shirt or backpack or something like that to be like, well, it's pretty obvious who they are. Kids are dumb.
Can you imagine if so Jalen Hill is like 6'11", right? Yeah. If you're like the one 6'11" person in that city in China, and you happen to walk into the Louis Vuitton store wearing like a UCLA pullover and try to shoplift out of there, like what in the world are they doing?
I mean, what are you doing trying to shoplift in Louis Vuitton anyways? Like, especially if you're LiAngelo. Again, it just shows that kids are dumb. I don't think this is anything else besides just being a dumb 18-year-old, 19-year-old, however old they are. And the sense that, I mean, like, LiAngelo obviously can go get Louis Vuitton if he really wanted. It's just, what are you doing? What are you doing? You're in China. Like, that's the second to last place I'd ever try to shoplift.
What's the last place?
Korea.
North Korea?
Yeah.
I don't think I'd want to shoplift in Russia.
That would be bad, too.
That'd be real bad.
But, like, either way, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, look, here's the thing. Like, I'm not going to shoplift, like, in America.
Right.
I'm not going to shoplift down the street, man. Like, there's nothing that I need bad enough, particularly from, like, Louis Vuitton.
Right. Like, what are you getting there?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I guess they just need that, I don't know. But see, like, I'm the wrong person to ask about stuff like that because, like, designer clothes don't really mean anything to me. If I don't have a shirt and jeans on, like, that's what I wear, like, 99% of the time.
No, like, I value the free stuff I get. Like, if somebody sends me, like, a free, like, t-shirt, I'm wearing that more often than not.
Yeah, I have a lot of – how many t-shirts do you have in your rotation?
Oh, I have – man, I have a lot. I have a solid – like, I have three drawers of t-shirts.
There's like an entire shelf in my closet that is all t-shirts. And I got rid of probably like 70% of the t-shirts I had.
I've cleaned my t-shirt drawer so many times and they just still keeps filling up.
Yeah, because I mean, there's nothing better than a nice, like, crisp t-shirt.
Yeah, I love just like a basic t-shirt to wear out. And then I have like in my rotation, like, you know, like I have a couple Giants t-shirts, a couple Knicks t-shirts, a couple random like colleges that I've been to that my dad goes and like still gets like a t-shirt and like will give to me. I'm like, all right, here, that's fine. And it's just like I love them. It's there's nothing better than a good t-shirt.
Yeah, there really isn't. You know what I hate? I hate when you put the t-shirt into the washing machine and it dries and it gets like a little stretched out at the bottom.
Uh-huh.
Like that's,
or shrinks in the arms a little bit.
See, I don't mind that at all. Like I hate when the arms are a little bit too baggy. I'd rather the arms be a little bit too tight. But I hate when, like, the bottom and it starts getting a little bit, like, flowy and it, like, sticks out in the back and the front.
Yeah.
Because I already got to suck in the gut a little bit as it is. Like, just, like, walking down the street. When it flows out a little bit, it makes you look even fatter than I am.
Yeah, it's not helping any of us.
Yeah. I'll tell you. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, go ahead.
We need to get back on track. Like, what we were just talking about?
About how, what's going through your mind trying to shoplift from Louis Vuitton.
Yeah, so as we're recording this, we are waiting for LeVar Ball to actually address the media in China, and I don't know. So Arash Markazi, who is actually out there, just tweeted that he said the LeVar Ball press conference is taking place later at the hotel in Shanghai. So it's, I don't think it's actually going to come while we're sitting here talking on the podcast. So is there anything we need to add about this? Like, I think one point that we need to make is that according to Wetzel's reporting, there's like a real chance that these guys made it. Like, they don't have bail the way that we have bail. Apparently, like, you can't just, if you get arrested for something, you can't just go and get them out. So I guess that they might have to spend like as long as a month there. Like, can you believe that? How about this? LeVar Ball sends a kid to UCLA, like, he tries to build this whole brand and make a reality TV show. Like, did you expect that reality TV show would be, like, potentially an international diplomatic crisis.
Yeah.
We have LeVar Ball right now trying to get his son out of a Chinese prison.
And it's just...
Think about that.
It's speechless. Like, I'm completely speechless because it's the perfect storm. Like you said, it's China and it's LeVar Ball. Like any other kid, any other country, and it's just like you just kind of make a joke about it. But it's the fact that it's, or you just kind of laugh it off. The fact that it's China and LeVar Ball, this is gonna be one of the biggest stories of the season this year, just of like what's going on.
Yeah.
It's going to be talked about ad nauseum.
Yeah, and I wonder if this is the kind of thing that will actually last that long. Like, I'm not going to pretend to know how stuff, like the legal systems like that work in China, but I got to imagine that if we're talking about someone as famous as LiAngelo Ball and LeVar Ball are, we're talking about someone that is a member of an athletic team like UCLA, which is probably one of the
biggest Asian population colleges.
Yeah, and maybe one of like the 15 to 20 biggest brands in American sports. Is that pushing it?
No, that sounds about right. Top 25-ish.
Somewhere around, like, in terms of what everything that happened with them in the 60s and the 70s with John Wooden and all that. It's whatever it is. It's a major, major like brand in the United States. A sports team that people are going to know about. At a school with a very large Asian population, as you mentioned, and they have someone in prison. I can't picture a situation where like U.S. diplomats don't get involved here. They don't get those kids out. Like, I just can't picture them sitting there, you know, spending Thanksgiving in a Chinese jail. I just don't think that there's any real chance that happens.
I'm guessing it's going to be like a week.
I think they get out before the game.
Oh, yeah. Well, the other wrinkle in this whole thing is Trump's over in China right now, too. Like, it's the perfect storm. It really is.
Yeah. So if you're Steve Alford and these kids get out, do you play them? What do you do?
I mean, are they losing? can you throw them in, suspend them for a half contingent on what's going on?
I don't know, man. It's just, can you... What do you do if you're Steve Alford right now? Let's talk about that. What do you do if you're the head coach of a program in a country like China and you have three players sitting in jail? Like, I don't. I'm sorry, I'm laughing at this, but it's just the idea of this is just so ridiculous to me. I don't really know how.
No, it is like react. It's hard not to laugh at it, but I mean, I think he's got to be freaking out a little bit too, because I mean, let's face it, people like to pin things on coaches. You know, oh, they lost control of the program, or they lost control of the locker room. Especially if it's, offered, people are hit or miss on him. Like, there's not a lot of, middle ground, especially for UCLA fans.
I mean, let's call it like it is. He was on the hot seat before last year. Like, yeah, there was legitimate talk about trying to fire Steve Alford.
There was a plane that flew over the campus with it.
Yeah, and this is not going to help that reputation.
Right.
I can't imagine.
So I think he's got to be freaking out a little bit from a professional standpoint, in the sense of, oh, what's this going to do to my job? Because let's say that they don't, get suspended and UCLA struggles out of the gate. Like, let's say they lose to Georgia Tech. I don't know what their schedule looks like off the top of my head after that, but let's just say they're like barely winning games they should win easily, or lose one other one that they shouldn't lose. And, and they go into middle of December, late December, kind of like, an average team. This is just going to get brought up time after time of going, well, if Alford would have better control of his players, because that's what people do.
What do you make of this group overall?
I'm huge on Aaron Holiday. I think he's going to be I think he's one of the breakout players. I think they're like, I have them. What do I have? I have them like 20th. I'm a little higher than that, but I think they're like in between like 16 and 25.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think that they have the talent to be a team that can get to the Final Four. I think that there are enough defensive issues that they could end up being I think there's some real disaster potential with this team, legitimate 8-8 in the Pac-12 kind of deal.
Pac-12's bad. That's the one thing though. I just think the Pac-12's bad outside of the top four.
Yeah, I just can see a scenario where. So I think that yeah, you might be right.
And they don't have Arizona twice. Like, they only have Arizona once. So you get another what should be guaranteed win out of that.
Yeah, but still, just I guess my larger point is like I can see some the bottom falling out of this team.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they're a weird team in the sense of how low the ceiling is and how high the floor is, are one of the few teams that I feel that way about. I don't think they have the talent to be a Final Four team, but I think they should be a second weekend team, depending how the bracket falls.
Yeah, maybe I'm a little higher on them than you, but I think that they can get that far. And I guess what my larger point was is that maybe this is the kind of thing that can turn what is a promising season into something of a disaster. Like it's just not the way that you want to start the year out by having to get three guys out of a Chinese jail. Like
No.
I just can't wrap my head around the fact that this is actually happening.
No, like, could you imagine? Like, the scary thing is the fact that these kids couldn't talk to the coaches during this police investigation. So, Alford's kind of out of the, he's, I'm assuming, again, I'm not going to pretend to be smart and know, like, I, or act like I know, like, the Chinese culture and system, but I'm
I'm
assuming the
not going to
cops.
pretend to be smart. Those are good words to live by.
Yeah. I'm assuming the cops aren't telling the coaches a whole lot during the investigation.
No, they don't tell cops here don't tell coaches
Right,
anything. Do
right.
you think cops here are going to tell like if a Chinese soccer team comes here and does their tour and gets three players arrested, do you think those cops are going to be telling the Chinese coaches anything?
Right.
No.
And I think it's possibly even worse over there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just can't imagine. I can't imagine being offered trying to sit there and go, okay, well, what the hell is the next step here? Like, they're on a bus to Shanghai or wherever tomorrow. Because
I mean,
they're only in the city for a couple days.
yeah. So I guess there that LeVar is actually talking to the media at the hotel in Shanghai. So maybe that means that they got the players out.
Maybe. Or maybe they moved them to the Shanghai prison or something like that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, man. I don't think there's anybody in the world that is happier that this happened than Josh Pastner.
Oh.
He spent he had what maybe so when did this news break? This news broke around like 4 o'clock, right? That LiAngelo Ball was arrested.
Yeah, 3:34, something like that.
So Parrish's story popped up at like I
And it
think
was
the
early, it
first
was
time.
like 8:30 a.m.
Yeah, so let's call it 8 a.m., right? Let's say he published that story at 8 a.m. So Pastner like dominated Twitter for 8 hours, and all of a sudden like everybody's forgotten about him. Because the team that he is playing in China had
No.
three players get arrested, one of whom was LeVar Ball's son.
And yeah, I mean, it. Pastner is just he's just got to laugh at the game on Friday. Like when he sees Alford, be like, "Thank you."
Do they still play the game at this point? Like, serious
Yeah,
question.
I mean, they're gonna end up playing like a 3-on-3 game. Like,
At
just
this rate, we're going to have to suit up Pastner and Alford, which is not a good
right.
thing for Georgia Tech.
I mean, let's just go like Ben Lammers and like UCLA, like Ben Lammers versus Thomas Welsh 1-on-1.
If they flew you out there right now, would you go suit up and play?
I mean, it'd be a good story. I'd be winded pretty quickly,
I
but I'd go play.
don't. Yeah, you know what? I definitely would do it.
I
Who
mean,
am I
it'd
kidding?
be a
I was going
great
to explain
story.
why I wouldn't do it, but like, hell yes, I would go do that.
Right.
Kidding.
Like, if I'm getting like a first class flight out there, if I'm not sitting coach for a flight from the e like, well, if from Cincinnati to China, then I'd be down to go do it.
Yeah, I mean that's a long day of travel, man.
It is.
To
It
go play
is.
one basketball game. But you know what? I would want to get on the UCLA roster. I wouldn't want to play for Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech plays slow. UCLA, I'll be
Yeah,
able to get some
no.
shots up.
I want to be on UCLA, yeah, for sure. Like, I want to run the offense. I don't want to run the offense through Ben Lammers.
I got to get on my Bryce Alford out there.
Oh, for sure. For
I
sure.
can look. I can shoot as many shots as each shot in the game.
I mean, I would like to be a little Lonzo. Like, I just want to throw a bunch of lobs, and UCLA has dudes that can just go get the ball.
Yeah, like, but like, I wouldn't. No, I can go get my rebounds.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a passer. I'm a passer.
We should squad up out there then.
That's it. We can run the backcourt for UCLA.
Oh man. All right, so are we done with the Ball family?
Yeah, I think we got to go to the final piece of the suspension triangle from today.
The drama trifecta.
Yeah, and that's Colin Sexton, man. The last I saw, it was right before we started recording that it's now he's ruled ineligible. I know yesterday he wasn't cleared. Now it's he's ruled ineligible. Well,
it was the same thing what I was explaining earlier about the
yeah.
Georgia Tech guys. And this fits with everyone that is all the guys on Auburn that are being held out. D'Anthony Melton, who I've been told so USC doesn't have any secret scrimmages or doesn't have any official exhibitions,
yeah.
right? But they've had two secret scrimmages, and I've been told that Melton was held out of both of those.
Yeah.
I was not explicitly told that it was because of this FBI investigation, but I would assume that it is. I think that's probably is the best way to phrase it.
Yeah.
But with him and with potentially anyone that pops up at Arizona, Colin Sexton, the guys at Auburn.
Possibly Miami. I talked to somebody there, and no one I know has been held out yet.
I think that they're going to be in the clear. So what happened with
yeah.
the reason that potentially D'Anthony Melton and potentially someone at Arizona and now Colin Sexton and the people at the two kids, Austin Wiley and D'Angelo Purifoy at Auburn, they were explicitly linked. They weren't named, but players were explicitly mentioned in the FBI complaints that were handed out where either they or their or more likely their family members were given some kind of impermissible benefits that came from these financial advisors or that came from Christian Dawkins. And either they went through the assistant coaches or the assistant coaches facilitated that payment. So there's a very clear link there. With Miami, what happened with Miami is different. It was kind of like what happened with Rick Pitino in Louisville, except they didn't actually get the deal done. So they were going after a kid that was quite clearly Nasir Little, right?
Yep.
And he was associated or so I guess what happened was there was a confrontation between I believe it was Jim Gatto and Merle Code where they basically said Coach 3 who has come out I believe Jim Laranjega actually said that he is Coach 3 or believes he is Coach 3.
He was told that he is Coach 3.
So what happened was those guys were having a conversation where they basically said Coach Laranjega has okayed this. There wasn't anything directly linking Miami there beyond the hearsay of what was on those conversations when the FBI was able to tap those phones. So that's why nothing is going to happen with any players at Miami because it was a deal where they were trying to get a kid in the 2018 recruiting class and get Adidas to funnel him $150,000, allegedly. Like this, there isn't even any evidence of Coach L or anyone on that staff, any of the assistants actually requesting this. There's only – I'm pretty sure it's Merle Code. I'd have to go back and double check, but I'm pretty sure it's Merle Code that actually says we need to this is what the Miami coach wants.
Yeah.
So that's why, long story short, that's why Miami doesn't have any players being held out. And the reason that the other guys are being held out is because when you commit these violations – you get ruled ineligible, and you have to appeal to the NCAA to get them to reinstate that eligibility and make you allowed to play games again. And that's why they're being held out, because they're not necessarily eligible at this moment.
So now the big news is obviously Colin Sexton.
Oh, yeah, Colin Sexton. So I got this I forgot where I was going with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, because that came out today. I'll say today that he is now ineligible.
Well, what happened was we knew he was being held out. We knew he was, I guess, was it last night that Alabama released a statement that said that he has not been cleared to play by the NCAA
yeah.
yet?
Yep.
And I believe it was today that Jeff Goodman of ESPN confirmed what we all knew. Like, we all knew that Colin Sexton was the player whose father, so what happened with him was there was a guy, I believe he was like the associate AD. Is that what his title was?
It was he was like the, oh, I know. You're talking about Kobe Baker.
It's Kobe Baker. I forget what his exact title
was. He was like the – it wasn't Associate AD. It was like an associate's manager or something like that.
Yeah, it was someone in the – like that worked with the team in the athletic department. And he went out to dinner with someone who appeared to be Colin Sexton's father, was an elite freshman going to Alabama at a restaurant in Atlanta. And Colin Sexton is from Pebble Brook. He went to Pebble Brook High School, but he's basically from like that area.
He's from Atlanta.
Yeah, he's from there. So it was, when Kobe Baker was there, he was paid $10,000 by, I believe it was the undercover informant, it was the informant, the guy that was the financial advisor that flipped and turned the state's witness. And so he gave Kobe Baker $10,000 that facilitated that payment. And I guess some of that money was supposed to end up going to Sexton and his family. And Goodman today confirmed and made it official that was actually Colin Sexton's dad that was involved in that. So Colin Sexton was caught up in the scandal as well, which is something that we all expected and we all knew.
Yeah, which it just sucks because he's one of my favorite players to watch.
So what do you think of him? I'm not necessarily...
I'm super high on him. Like, I had him as, like, 8 on my big board out of college players for NBA draft. I think I had him 13 All-American in my preseason. I think he's good enough to make Alabama, to get Alabama to the Sweet 16. Like, especially because I think that with him and Avery Johnson Jr. on the floor, you can kind of play a little bit more up-tempo because you have two ball handlers and you surround them. Well, Braxton Key's now hurt, but if Braxton Key's healthy, John Petty, you know, like Daniel Giddens, something like that, you can surround and just really go up-tempo. And, you know, I think Avery Johnson's a good enough coach. And I think teams with two guards at the college level that can really handle the ball are just so much better, and that's what Sexton brings.
All right, and one quick note before I give you my thoughts on Sexton. LeVar Ball has decided not to speak. He's been advised by his legal counsel not to say anything at a press conference, so he won't actually be holding that press conference, so we won't be able to react live to LeVar Ball going all Liam Neeson taking 4. So I'm sorry, Reeks, to break that news to you.
I could imagine being the lawyer telling, hey, you can't say anything.
You know what? His lawyer might be the only person that he actually listens to.
That's true.
So my take on Sexton is I think that in theory he is exactly who Alabama needs, right? Alabama finished last season 10th in defensive efficiency on KenPom. Yep. They finished 153rd in offensive efficiency on KenPom. They have guys that can defend. They didn't have anyone that could score. They brought everybody back, and they added Sexton, who was – I want to say he was the leading scorer in Georgia high school basketball last season. He was the leading scorer in the EYBL by 8 points per game. He averaged 31 last year. Michael Porter averaged 23. And he had twice as many free throw attempts in the EYBL as anybody else in the EYBL last year. So, yes, in theory, he is exactly who Alabama needs. And if he ends up being a guy that can score like that, assuming he, you know, gets eligible to play this season, which is not any guarantee, I think that he is – the guy, the kind of player that they need to be able to change things, right? But I also, I'm just, so the way that he plays is what kind of bothers me. Like, he gets in the lane and, like, he jumps into people and he draws fouls. And at the high school level, I mean, that works, right? But I'm not convinced at the college level that he's going to be able to draw fouls at the same level and finish in the paint at the same level, and that the way that he plays is going to be as effective. Like, I've talked with coaches that were just kind of like, yeah, we stayed out of that whole Colin Sexton deal because we just don't know if he's actually going to be able to get it done in college the way that he got it done in high school. So I'm not saying that he can't. I'm not saying that he can. I need to be able to see him do it and see him be able to have that effect in college before I buy in fully on this Alabama team.
Do you think that's where, though, maybe him playing for a guy like Avery Johnson, who knows the NBA level and now the college level, where that type of coach would help him kind of develop that game and not, you know, say, hey, you just can't put your head down, jump into people and hope to draw a foul?
Yeah, probably. But he'll also have him for what? Maybe like 3 months?
Yeah, I thought that was a good fit in the sense of coach to player personality style.
No, it is. And I totally agree with what you're saying. I don't know how much of an impact he'll be able to have in the limited amount of time that I'll actually have him on campus, if that makes sense. But, yeah. I mean, look, like I said, in theory, this is the ideal matchup. And, like, to be clear, I have Alabama ranked 23rd in the country. Like, I don't think they're going to be bad. I just wonder if Sexton is actually going to be the answer. Or so here's my thing. I think he needs to be a guy that gets you 17 points a night. I can see I can see him ending up averaging 12 or 13 points and having maybe the kind of impact. Like, remember how we all expected Malik Newman to come in and average like 18 or 19 points for Mississippi State, and then he came and averaged 12 points a game and transferred? Like, I could see a scenario where that occurs with Colin Sexton.
Yeah, I like the the supporting cast more around Sexton than what Newman had at Mississippi State. I see what you're saying there. That's probably a good comparison. But I mean, I just love a guy that plays pissed off for 40 minutes.
He is wildly entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
SEC basketball fans, like all nine of you, are going to love watching this kid play.
Yeah, like they're going to be super fun. Do you want to move on from that? I think we kind of.
Well, I just want to give one quick anecdote about Colin Sexton, because when I saw him play, the way that they run Peach Jam, right, is like Peach Jam is where the top 24 teams on the EYBL circuit end up going to play. You qualify for Peach Jam, you play in like this one building. It's a really awesome setup. Reeves, if you've never been there, you got to get down there for 1 year.
No, I've never been.
It's legitimately like, so I love going to the Final Four. I love going to the Champions Classic. When it comes to like basketball events, like Peach Jam is not quite on that level, but it's probably up there with like, in the top 10, like, events that I go to in a year. It's just the community support it gets, how good the basketball actually is, how hard those kids play, everything about it, it's great. But if you don't qualify for Peach Jam, they run this thing called the Peach Invitational, the high school down the street, because what they want to do is they want to make sure all the Nike-affiliated teams are in the same area. Colin Sexton's team didn't actually qualify for the Peach Jam, which is kind of a concern. In its own right. But his first game at the Peach Invitational, he's playing against Alex O'Connell, who's the kid that ended up going to Duke. And this was before O'Connell kind of had like his blow-up moment, and I think this was his blow-up moment. So Sexton and O'Connell's teams are playing at a time where the only games going on like at the Peach Jam main event are like 16U games. So I walk into this gym, this high school gym, and I've been to a lot of these AAU events. I've been to a lot of the big time events. I've never seen a gym that packed with that many coaches staffs sitting that deep. Like Arizona was there, Sean Miller 3 deep. Duke was there, Coach K 3 deep. Roy Williams was there with 3 assistants. Bill Self was there with 3 assistants. Like you go through the top 25 programs in the country, and probably 20 of them, 24 of them were there like full staff. It was unbelievable. I've never seen it like that before. And Alex O'Connell just like he went ham. Like he probably had like 28 points. He was dunking on people. He was like hitting step back threes. He was awesome. And I don't know if that's like the first moment when Duke kind of like really got in on him as a recruit. But I know that it was maybe like a month and a half later that Alex O'Connell was committed to go play at Duke.
Probably went hand in hand.
Yeah. But Sexton during that game, like he didn't play, he didn't start, he came off the bench. It was a 32-minute game. He probably played 15 minutes. He had just gotten back from, I want to say it was China for the U17s.
Yeah.
I forget where, maybe it was Korea. It was somewhere where he had to go through a lot of time zones and he had like 20 hours to travel or whatever. So he was tired. So like he didn't really play. But like when he sat on the bench, he didn't sit, you know how in high school gyms, they have the bleachers come all the way down and they'll just have the first row of the bleachers be the bench where the team sit.
Yep.
And then you know how when you walk up those high school gym bleachers, like it goes wood, wood, wood. And it's just like someone kind of scooped out this section of it. Yep. He would sit like where you would walk up with like, it was the team and then a bunch of like fans and stuff. And then he was sitting off like 20 feet down. And when he got on the floor, like he just, I mean, it's hard to explain if you haven't seen how he plays. He's just, he's out of his mind talking to himself, smacking himself in the head, screaming and yelling, like staring people down. It's just, it was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And he's doing all of this in front of all these, in front of Bill Self, who was recruiting him, Avery Johnson, who was recruiting him, you know, all of the big name programs that were in the mix, like Oklahoma State, all of these programs that were there, like were the guys that were recruiting him, and he was trying to like show out for, because this was right after he kind of blew up and went from a kid that was like a borderline top 100, like 3/4-star kid, to someone that was like a top 10 prospect that was actually in the mix for the likes of Kansas and North Carolina. So it was just everything about the scene was just so surreal and so weird and just so utterly AAU. It was perfect.
I mean, that just screams AAU. Like, it just screams AAU. The fact of just like sitting in like the cutout portion, like the walk up portion of the bench, to everything. That's AAU. That's been AAU.
To not playing in the first half and like,
right.
And so here's the other part about it. Like, Nike schedules these games so that you have like these marquee matchups. Like, Alex O'Connell and Colin Sexton were probably the two best players that weren't playing in Peach Jam and were in the Peach Invitational, and they were supposed to play against each other, because that's like, I mean, that's how you build hype, is you put these like matchups together. And like, Sexton barely even played, didn't really give a damn, and Alex O'Connell's out here just like, you know, killing people.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that would have made it more AU if it's like somebody showed up to fill up a team in the second half.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's the only thing that would have been more AU.
With jerseys that didn't match.
Right, right, right.
Like, random pair of shoes. They got to shoot the technical foul because the guy wasn't in the book for the game.
Yeah. And then like the bookkeepers are arguing about it.
So we kind of had a game like that when I was in AAU. It was I was playing for Connecticut Gold, and the guy that ran our AAU program like had another AAU program out in New York, and he sent us to like this hoop group tournament. I don't know if you ever played in the hoop group events, but
all the time.
It was this hoop group event. I want to say it was at Villanova. It was somewhere in like the Philly area, right? I'm pretty sure it was at Villanova. This was back when you were still allowed to have the AAU tournaments on campus.
Yeah.
So like, he filled out spots for two teams, but the team that was coached by the New York guys like pulled out because they had something else to play in. So we're playing at this event in Villanova, and he's just like, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to play the games for both teams. He was like, fuck it. We're going to play six games this weekend. We're going to double our chances to see if we can qualify. We were like, all right, we can do it. And then what happened was one of the games was scheduled for the same time. So luckily we had 10 guys there.
So it was 5-5.
It was 5-5. And so what happened was like, our game was against the best, probably the best AAU team I've ever played for or played against. I want to say it was like, I forget what the exact name of it was, but they had, their front line was like a 6'9" wing and 2 7-footers in the middle. And like, we have half our team. Like, we're normally like, we had some guys go D1 off that team. Tim Abramidis played from that program.
Oh, yeah. But
like, we didn't have anyone big enough to deal with those guys when we had half the team. So we got smoked. So afterwards, like, we're walking back, like, through the gym to the other game we're watching. And the other team is like, hanging with this team from Maryland that was actually pretty good. It had a couple D1 guys on it. And so we all run over there, and we're like, all right, you need some subs, because they were down to four people. They were down by two with, like, a minute and a half left. And they were down to four people. But we couldn't go check into the game because the coach was like, I can't risk the foul shots that it'll take because none of you guys are in the book. So we had to sit there. We had to sit there with our uniforms on, watching our team play with four guys left because we didn't have any names actually in the book. Shout out to Kevin Kehoe in Connecticut Gold, man. He was the best.
That's perfect. I'm trying to remember if I don't think we ever played Connecticut Gold.
Who did you play for?
So I played for York Blast, and then we actually started our own AAU program my junior year, which was York Red Storm. We played for 2 years before we all graduated. We played some big time talent, especially we would go down to like the Virginia area and play like First Baptist was, I think it was First Baptist was their name. They were loaded. Went to Jersey, played a lot of the Jersey AAU programs that those dudes could play. But honestly, the best team I still ever played was in high school when I played the Morris Twins.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, there was the Morris Twins. Rodney Green played at LaSalle. They had a dude go to Stony Brook. They had two dudes that didn't qualify that were recruited Division I but were not eligible academically. And That was the most loaded team I've ever played. They were incredible.
So we played DeJuan Wagner's team once. It was the year I was on 16s, and this was the 17s played DeJuan Wagner, and he showed up at the end of the first quarter, right, wearing like his Tims. Right. In the second quarter, like he changes into his uniform and everything, and he's like sitting there on the sideline stretching. And so it goes to halftime, and like they're kind of hanging in there, man. Like that. So like that team had a kid go to LaSalle, had a point guard that played at Central Connecticut, had a kid go to Northeastern, had a kid play at UMass. Like that was a good team with a bunch of high level D1 guys. And in the third quarter, DeJuan Wagner comes out and drops 35 points in that quarter. They go from being up like six to being up like 28. And then he, at the end of the third quarter, goes back to the bench, takes off his shoes, and he's gone with 4 minutes left in the game.
I mean, that's just – AAU ball is just so perfect.
Dude, he put up 35 points in one quarter, man. I've never seen anything like it.
That's unreal. That's absolutely unreal. All right, let's get into the season because we can finally talk about basketball since it's here in like 3 days.
An hour into the podcast.
We're yeah. But I mean, basketball. I had to talk about that stuff. As much as we hate it, you had to talk about it just because it's – it is like the storyline of the season, as much as people don't want it to be.
And look, here's the thing, man. I know you guys might be sick of hearing about it by now, but it's not going away.
No,
we're talking about this nonstop. So what do you want to talk about, like preview and stuff? What do we still have to get to?
So I'm kind of curious of your thoughts on some. I looked at your top 25 compared to my top 25. Looked to kind of see who you were higher on, who you were lower on. And I've obviously been reading your preview stuff, which if you're listening to the podcast from my side, go check Rob's stuff out on collegebasketballtalk.com. And I was listening to your podcast with Norlander, and I had this question written down to ask you, and it's Norlander brought it up about how everyone's just kind of giving Miles Bridges National Player of the Year. And it's just kind of – and you mentioned it. You said, well, it's just a safe bet. Like, he's the – best player on the perceived one of the best three teams in the country. So if he doesn't win it, who do you think is the next logical choice?
Ooh, if I'm not going with Miles Bridges, I think I would probably go with Alonzo Trier.
Okay.
But I'm also like that one scares me a little bit just because, you know, with everything going on with the Arizona program, I can see like that thing falling off a cliff. And after that, I want to say Grayson Allen. Just because I think he's going to end up being the best player on a Duke team that, to me, has the most talented starting five. And look, I know people are going to push back against that, but I've said this probably 1,000 times already by now. Grayson Allen, as a sophomore, averaged 22 points, 5 boards, 4 assists, shot 41% from three. Second team All American. As a junior, he was the preseason National Player of the Year on just about like every. Did you have him as a? Has
I did not. I had Hart.
Okay, so fair. So he was, I would say, probably on 70% of the people that do these things. They probably said that great. Does that sound about right?
I had Grayson first team All-American.
Yeah, so, I mean, he was, at the very least, everyone had him as a first team All-American as a junior. And he gets injured early in the year. That team just turns into an absolute dumpster fire. He's got stuff going on off the court that we all kind of know about. And so that just ends up being a horrible junior year. But it doesn't mean that he was a bad basketball player all of a sudden.
Yeah, but you could see when he got healthy what he looked like.
Yeah, and he's healthy now. He got surgery to fix the ankle, took 3 months off over the summer, so like he's ready to go now. So I don't see any way. I understand the idea of why you want to push back against it, but all logic says that Grayson Allen had a weird year last year and that he is still the guy that he was when he was a sophomore, when he was unbelievable.
Yeah, he was really good. He was really good. And he played out of position most of that year anyways, playing on the ball.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Who is your – so last year, Frank Mason went from being a guy that was like a borderline third-round All-American pick to National Player of the Year. And for us, like I do those rankings literally every week starting with the first week of the season. Like next Monday, I'm going to do a Player of the Year power rankings.
And you do what, top 10, right?
Yeah, we do a top 10.
Yeah.
So, and I had Frank Mason because if you remember, it was that Friday the Friday night, the opening night game in Hawaii, he ended up putting, like, he put up 30 points and 9 assists and was unbelievable.
So much fun.
In an overtime loss to Indiana. And I, you know what? The first one I did was actually the second Monday of the season. So I don't think I did one the first Monday. But then the second Monday, he hit that game-winning shot against Duke in the Garden of the Champions Classic.
Yep.
And so he was – right away, he was number one on my list for the Player of the Year power rankings. And he really never went away. I think I might have dropped him up, like, down to second maybe 1 week or 2 weeks or something like that when Josh Hart was starting to do his thing. But – he was, for the most part, like the preseason player or the player of the year throughout the entire year. So let me ask you this. Who was the guy that you think that kind of the off-the-board pick that could end up doing what Frank Mason did?
That's a good question. I'm looking here. I'm trying to think. Like, I think Joel Berry would have been the popular answer before he got hurt, just because I think he's going to put up some serious numbers this year. Off the board, though, what about like a – I mean, I'm trying to think, like, who's not on, like, everyone's first team or really, like, second team All-American. What about, like, Javon Carter?
Maybe. I just don't know. With Asa Ahmad suspended for a semester.
Yeah.
Like, I was thinking about him, too. I'm not convinced that West Virginia has that year. And I don't think we can't count Jalen Brunson in that conversation.
No, right? Because I picked Brunson to be my National Player of the Year.
You did?
Yep. Yeah. Okay. I always go a little contrarian. With NPOY, like, everyone's on Bridges, and, like, when I did, like, my top 50 players, like, Bridges is the number one player in the country, but I just think Brunson, like, Villanova's going to win 30 games. I think Brunson's good enough to be the guy. Like, he was better than Josh Hart in the Big East last year. The question is it because defenses were taking away Hart, or was it because Brunson just kept developing, or a combination of both? I just, you know, he's arguably the smartest player in the country. I think he can just kind of put it all together.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't hate. There's a better than zero chance that he ends up being National Player of the Year. Like, I would probably have him be fourth in those rankings I just gave you. I mentioned Trier, I mentioned Grayson. I would have Brunson fourth probably.
So off the radar, it's a guy that me and you were and a team that me and you were both high on. What about Bruce Brown?
Yeah, I think so. That's one of the guys that I was thinking about, and. Like, I think that he has a chance to make a real jump this year.
Yeah, and he's not on, like, those first two team All-Americans where, like, a Bonzi Colson is. Miami.
We have him second team. But
oh, I think I had him second team, too. But I'd say most people have him third or lower.
Yeah, that's probably fair. And I think he could definitely make a run at it.
Especially if Miami wins the ACC regular season.
Yeah, and part of the reason that, like, Frank Mason was able to make this run is because, like, he was on a really, really good team. But he didn't really get any of the credit for being on that good team because everyone wanted to put Josh Jackson as a first-team All-American, right?
Yeah,
and there's really anyone in that same position where they might actually be the best player while everyone is hyping up someone else on their team.
Who are some other guys that, off the top of your head, that you think could kind of fill out this role of the Frank Mason?
I think that someone like Trevon Blewett can make a run at it. I'm not sure where people have him. I'm super high on him. I think he'd end up averaging like 22 a game. Aaron Holiday, who you mentioned, is a guy that, assuming that UCLA ends up being as good as I think their ceiling is, can make a run at something along those lines. I think that if he ever does get eligible and he hits his ceiling, I think that Colin Sexton is a guy that probably needs to be in that conversation as well. And I'm going to give you an off-the-board pick because I think this guy, he is number two on my list of breakout players. I think you can make an argument for him being number one. Can you guess who it's going to be? If you listen to the podcast with Norland, then you probably know.
I got out of my car right when you were getting to this part.
Carson Edwards at Purdue.
I'm so high on Carson Edwards this year. Dudes who play like those overseas summer tournaments, like the U19s or the World University Games, he played them both. Always make a jump that year after.
Yeah, and he's a guy that's never. He's always been, like, super talented, but he's never been on a team where he can really, like, be the superstar. Like, I think he played with De'Aaron Fox and Jared Vanderbilt when he was playing on the AAU circuit. Like, he's never really been the guy. And with everyone that Purdue ends up losing, or everyone, with the fact that they lose Caleb Swanigan, I think that he's going to end up having to be the guy for this team. Like, yeah. I love Vince Edwards, but he's kind of, to me, like what OG and Anobi should have been last season. Like, that's the role that he fits, right? Like, he's not really a star. I don't think he's the guy that you want being your leading scorer. That's not to say he's not Purdue's best player. He might end up being Purdue's best player in the same way that Josh Jackson was probably Kansas's best player last season. And I think that Carson Edwards is a guy, like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he averages, you know, 18 points and 4 or 5 assists for Purdue, who ends up being a top 10 to 15 team. I don't think that's crazy to think that.
You're so much higher on Purdue than I am. I have Purdue like 6 in the Big Ten.
Well, see, here's the thing. I also have them at like number 25 in our top 25, and I seriously consider dropping them out for either Providence or Oregon. So I don't think that is like.
Yeah, I had Oregon at 25 and Purdue out.
I don't know if I would bet on that happening, but I don't think, like, if you look at the range of possibilities on what could happen with their season, I think it's more likely that that Carson Edwards could end up being like the national player of the year, like 18-4 on a top 10 to 15 Purdue team, than it would be like Purdue ends up finishing 7th or 8th in the Big Ten and is like on the bubble come March.
Yeah. I think Swanigan was so important to that team in the sense of, and I know they did not play slow or did not play like traditional post-Purdue play, but he was an excellent, not was, he is an excellent passer out of the low and high post. He drew double teams and was able to kick to these open shooters, and those dudes can all shoot the ball. I don't think Isaac Haas can do that.
Yeah.
And that's just what it comes down to for me.
So what I wonder with that is I think that they're actually going to double Isaac Haas more. Because I think what made Swanigan so dangerous is that you couldn't really double him in the post because he was such a good passer out of the post.
Yeah,
so,
I think they double Haas more, but I don't think Haas can pass out of it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. Haas is going to be interesting, man. Like, the big thing for Purdue is going to end up being, like, what happens with the rest of that size. Like, I think Jaquill Taylor is still dealing. He was out last season with a stress fracture, and I believe, like, he had he re-aggravated it at the start of the year. I don't know if he's going to be healthy at the start by the start of the season. They haven't really been clear on that. So that should end up being like their second big guy. They got another 7'3" dude that's a registered freshman, but Purdue's front court is a major question mark for me. And I'm kind of like all in and like all the way here for Purdue playing lineups with Vince Edwards at the 5 and guards around him. Like I'm here for that.
That'd be their best lineup. I don't think it's that close.
Yeah, let's do it, man. I'm also here for lineups where Michigan State plays Jaren Jackson at the 5 and Miles Bridges at the 4. I just don't know how much is going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I like that lineup too. Before we get into rapid fire, one more thing I'm going to go a little bit more in depth with you on is, and I think this is one of the bigger storylines in the country this year, is what's your take on the American Conference and how important is this year to that conference? Like, how do you view this conference?
I think that they got a lot better with Wichita State's addition because it gives them another top-level program. And I think that once Memphis returns to what they've been and UConn returns to what they've been and Temple kind of gets better and a little bit more consistent, like, I think it's going to be fine. You know, I think that the fact that the bottom of the league with Tulane, with East Carolina, like, those teams are never going to be great.
Right.
And I think that the drop-off, you know, you throw in South Florida in there, is more than what it is in the Big Ten or what it is in the Big East or what it is in the ACC. But, like, you know, Boston College is a train wreck. You know, Pitt is just a disaster.
Yeah.
So it's not like the bottom of the ACC is all that much worse than what is at the bottom of the AAC. And I think when you look at the top, like, Central Florida is going to be awesome this year. I think Wichita State's going to be really, really good. I think that Cincinnati is like a legitimate top 10 team. I think that SMU has NCAA tournament potential. I think that UConn has NCAA tournament potential. So to me, like, the AAC is a power conference at this point.
See, I think it's still in no man's land. I agree it got a lot better at the top because I think Wichita is a top 8 team in the country. But to me, they just don't seem to win those out-of-conference games, especially the middle of the group, like the middle of the conference. Cincinnati will get non-conference wins. Wichita, this is the first year they're there. But, you know, like last year, like UConn, not really getting out of conference wins. Temple not getting those non-conference wins. Houston's not getting those non-conference wins. I think they need to start getting some of those for me to feel like it's a true Power 7. Like right now it's like Power 6 conferences or Major 6 conferences, the Americans kind of in purgatory, and then mid-majors. And yeah, I guess the A-10 is a little bit above mid-majors.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was saying with, like, you know, once UConn gets back on track and once Memphis gets back on track. Because then when you look at the when you frame it as, you know, it's not just Cincinnati and SMU or Cincinnati and Wichita State at the top. It's Cincinnati, Wichita State, SMU, UConn, Memphis, Temple, and all those teams, Houston. I think when you look at it that way, Central Florida, then all of a sudden the middle of the league gets better. Whereas when it's like SMU and Cincinnati pulling away from everyone, then the rest of the league is just trash.
Right.
And that's why I guess I don't think that UConn is a program that is going to stay down forever. I don't think that Memphis is a program that is going to stay down forever. And I guess that's just kind of my larger takeaway is that the AAC, it was last year was more of a down year than it was a sign that the conference is not a power conference. Does that make sense? Like, I think they're always going to have a higher ceiling than what the Atlantic 10 is and what the Mountain West has turned into, as opposed to, like, here's a comparison that I'll make. I think that the way that it was last year, they were basically the WCC, right? Two teams above everybody else.
And then a bunch of crap.
Yeah, and then and that is because some of the programs that should be the best programs in that league were just not very good at all and not living up to the expectations that they're supposed to have, whereas UConn is like forever going to be better than BYU and Memphis is forever going to be better than San Francisco. It's just that every once in a while you have those years where you're down for whatever reason, whether it's injuries or Tubby Smith. So I guess that's what my take is.
Here's one for you. What streak ends first? The Big Ten winning a title or a West Coast team winning a title?
Ooh.
Because you got a couple choices this year.
Well, I'm going to go. You know what? I got to go with the Big Ten because Michigan State's my pick to win it all. So I have to say the Big Ten.
I mean, it's crazy that it's been, what, 17 years for the Big Ten and 20 years for the West Coast team?
Yeah, it's wild. I didn't even – wow. Yeah, you're right. That's nuts. I think it's going to be Michigan State, though. I think it's going to be them.
I agree. I think Michigan State will probably be my pick for winning it all as well. But, I always like to joke because people always yell at me like, oh, you're hyping up freshmen. When's the last, like, you can't win with freshmen. Why would you ever pick a team, you know, with freshmen to advance? It's like, why would you ever pick a team from the Big Ten or West Coast to advance when you're doing your bracket or whatever?
Like, yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. Villanova, three of the last 4 years, they've gotten knocked out in the second round of the NCAA tournament. And the fourth year, they won the national title. So it's basing things off of what happens in the NCAA tournament is just kind of, you never know who's going, like, it doesn't tell you who the best teams are, what the best programs are. It's what makes the sport so great and what kind of makes the sport so frustrating.
Oh yeah. It's nothing worse than, people citing like win loss records in the NCAA tournament. Who's the team that you're lower on than most or like from than like the AP poll or the coaches poll?
So I think Kentucky, can I say that? Where were they in the AP poll?
I think there were five in the AP poll, which is not correct.
They were five. So here's my take on Kentucky. I think that they have a real shot to be a national title contender by the end of the season. I don't think they're going to look anything like that at all at the start of the year. Like, this team is going to take some lumps early on.
Oh, yeah.
And as they kind of grow, in, as Quade Green kind of grows into the role of point guard, and they kind of figure out, you know, what their rotation is going to end up being. And, you know, maybe they kind of realize what their roles are going to end up being. And Kevin Knott kind of grows into potentially being a go-to scorer. And they learn how to be a really, really good defensive team. Like, that's the big thing with this group is I think they need to be a top five defense in the country. I think they need to be able to turn teams over at like a top 25 rate in the country. And I think they need to be able to score in transition because I don't see it when it comes to what they're going to be doing in the half court offensively. Like, I know PJ Washington's getting this hype, and I know Kevin Knox has looked pretty good in some exhibitions, and I know Wenye Gabriel hit three threes the other night, and Quade Green went like 7 for 7 from the floor or whatever it was. But until I see them do that, you know, I guess against the Champions Classic, until I see them do that in the Champions Classic, I don't know if I'm going to be able to buy this team as being in the same conversation as Duke, Michigan State, and Arizona, at least early on. Like, I think that they will get there, but I think it's going to take a little bit of there's going to be some growing pains. I think that's the best way to phrase it.
Yeah, I agree completely with everything you said. They were kind of like my second option. I still think UNC is valued way too high as a top 10 team. I just don't think UNC is going to be that good this year.
People have UNC as a top 10 team.
They were 9 in the AP.
Oh, well, yeah, that's because that's what happens when you win the national title the year before. I think we have them as like 18.
Yeah, I had them at 17. And I'm still like questioning if that's correct. Like, two.
But I ranked them that high before the Joel Berry injury too.
Same here. And I like, even with Joel Berry, I keep looking at it going, why do I have them above Notre Dame? Like, I think Notre Dame's going to be a better team than them.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. We have Notre Dame 14th, so.
Yeah. All right, last question before I let you get out of here. What's your bold prediction this year? You kind of mentioned a couple. What's your hot take for the college basketball year?
What's your boldest prediction?
I didn't even think about that. My hot take is, I think you're going to see a Final Four where it's someone's going to break their Final Four virginity. It's going to be like, you know, Sean Miller, Mike Bray, something like that. There's going to be a new team in the Final Four. It's not going to be it's heavy traditional up front. I think you're going to see it was wide open, so there's going to be someone new in the Final Four.
All right, I can get on board with that. I think that the difference between the top four and five, the gap from what we normally see, is much smaller compared to what it's been in past years. So I think that you're right. We're going to see a year where it's one of those weird years where like a 9 seed, a 4 seed, a 5 seed, and a 2 seed end up getting to the Final Four.
Right, like St. Mary's can make the Final Four, and I won't be surprised.
Oh, that is really bold.
But I'm saying like a team like that, like they'll be like a, you know, like a 6 seed.
Yeah, all right, yeah. So, okay, I see you there. I guess my boldest predictions were probably that Miami wins the ACC and Texas A&M wins the SEC.
Oh, yeah, A&M, that's – I mean, I can see it. I can see it. It's just – yeah.
I'm just all in on the Miami team. I love
Miami.
I love their guards. I love the way that Coach Larrañaga can work with guys that are athletic, that can run a pick and roll. And I think DeJuan Huell is going to end up having a really, really big year in the paint. And with Texas A&M, like, I'm not sold on anyone else in that league. I think it's more
– It's a weird league.
I think that Kentucky is going to end up having to grow into their team a little bit. Like, I could see Kentucky being a team that ends up going 13-5 in the SEC, but wins, like, their last 7 SEC games and wins the SEC tournament, that kind of year, where they really get it going in February. And Florida – I'm not sold on Florida at all. I think that we are completely undervaluing what the loss of Devin Robinson and Justin Leon and Casey Hill is going to mean for that team defensively. And remember, they finished second last season in defensive efficiency on KenPom. They won games because they were one of the best teams in the country on the defensive end of the floor, and I just can't see them repeating that this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still pretty high on Florida. I think Chris Chioza kind of makes that jump. And becomes what Kayvon Allen, like, makes up for Kayvon, or makes up for Casey Hill, I mean.
The way that it was phrased to me by someone from the SEC is that there is a reason that Chris Chioza didn't start last year.
Yeah, that's fair, too.
So that's that's part of the reason I've kind of gotten off Florida a little bit. I was higher on them earlier in the offseason, but just talking with people around that league, I don't know. They could get there. I think Mike White is a hell of a basketball coach, and I'm not going to put it past him to change what he does to fit his personnel. Like, I do think that bringing in this, the kid from Rice, I'm blanking on his name, and the Jalen Hudson kid. And I'm not going to act like those aren't key additions, but I just don't think that I think when people look at Justin Leon leaving, they're not really understanding just how good of a piece he was for that team. And you know, same goes for Casey Hill and Devin Robinson.
Right. So, all right. Anything else you want to touch on here? I know this ran long.
Yeah, it did run long. I don't think I have it. Were there any other questions that people asked? I saw you tweeted out and there were some responses that came.
No, pretty much just generic stuff. nothing that really jumped off the page.
Yeah, let's get out. We talked enough about Josh Pastner and ball for the next decade, and you know we're gonna end up having to record another podcast tomorrow night just because something else crazy is gonna happen.
Yep, there'll be another suspension. All right, yeah, if you haven't already, obviously if you're listening to this from the Fundamentally Sound side, make sure you rate, subscribe, review Rob's podcast. And Rob, where can everyone find your stuff?
You can find us at collegebasketballtalk.nbcsports.com. And make sure if you're listening to this from the NBC side to go find the Fundamentally Sound podcast with Reeves and Ben Bruss. Actually, you know what? I have a good Ben Bruss story. Can I end it with Ben Bruss?
Yeah, absolutely. He loves talking about his stories anyways.
All right, so this was 2016. It was in Philadelphia. It was the Sweet 16. Wisconsin is playing, I believe it was North Carolina. Might have been Notre Dame, but it was one of those two teams. You know what? It was Notre Dame. It was the year Notre Dame made it to the Elite Eight. So Wisconsin is playing Notre Dame in the Sweet 16. It was right after Bronson Koenig made that, like, miraculous
that
three.
Xavier shot.
Yeah, to beat Xavier. And I'm sitting there in press row, and if you guys haven't been to a game at the NCAA tournament, the way it works is they have the court. There's a row of press seats that goes up a step. There's another row of press seats. And then directly behind you is like the front row of the fans where they're sitting. And I'm sitting right in front of the Wisconsin section. And I just Wisconsin's like warming up in front of me. And there's this drunk, obnoxious guy behind me just sitting there going, Bronson! Bronson, let me get a shot. Bronson, let me get a shot. And like, finally, I'm sitting there like, this is going to go on the whole game. Like, I'm going to have this drunk idiot behind me yelling the whole game. And finally, like, he happens to get Bronson's attention, and Bronson looks over and kind of smiles and like gives him the nod. I'm like, what the hell's going on? And throws the ball to him in the middle of warm-ups. Throws the ball over my head to the guy behind me. I turn around. It's Ben Bruss.
That sounds about right.
Hammered, and he fires up a shot. I wish he was here to be able to defend himself. But like, so this wasn't deep. Like, remember when he hit that shot against Michigan, the half court shot?
He talks about it like every episode.
Yeah, to force overtime against Michigan. Like, he's got range, right? And we're talking that he was maybe 35 feet away from the rim. So he shoots, and like, he hits the back of the shot clock.
We're
talking about like maybe like 10 feet beyond the out of bounds line on the sideline, like directly in the corner. Like, that, it was a makeable shot, a very, very makeable shot within his range. And, like, he missed it by a good 12 feet. It was bad.
That's not a good look. Not a good look for a shooter, Ben.
Yeah, and I wish my only regret is he wasn't here to be able to defend himself.
But I'm sure he'll use the I'm hammered excuse.
It's 100% true. And the best news about that is, like, by the time the game started, like, I think maybe it caught up to him a little bit because he quieted down. I didn't have much yelling behind me. There were some funny smiles from Josh Goster, though.
I'm sure. All right. Well, thanks again for coming on, man. And doing
Hey, and thanks for coming on my podcast.
Yeah. That's the beauty of technology. So, again, sorry for running long. Again, rate, review, subscribe, both podcasts, and thanks again.